on a Friday afternoon traveling home, I would feel physically uncomfortable. And I was wondering, like, why am I feeling physically uncomfortable? I had a good week. I've done good work.
Most of us have probably had an experience of working in a job we felt was wrong for us. But could you work at a job you felt was actually wrong?
And then you realize that, you know, you may have done good work, but the goal that you're working towards is evil in a way. It does not align with your moral compass.
Today we're exploring a phenomenon called climate quitting, which is when people leave their jobs because they don't align with their values around climate change. I'm Gemma Ware, and this is The Conversation Weekly, the world explained by experts. Welcome, Sam. Great to have you in our makeshift studio here in the office in London.
Thanks, Gemma. It's good to be here.
So, Sam Phelps, you're one of the commissioning editors on the International Affairs desk at The Conversation in the UK. But more recently, you've been working on environment stories for The Conversation. And this is one of those stories we're going to be talking about today. Tell me how this story came about.
Yeah, so we run a series of articles called Quarter Life, where we look to answer questions about issues that affect those of us in our 20s and 30s.
So like you.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea for this particular story came out of a chat we had as a team about the ethics of working for the fossil fuel industry, particularly as a young person. So floods, fires, climate disasters, they're all obviously becoming more common, getting a lot worse. So there are plenty of reasons to avoid working in the industry that has played such a leading role in delivering us climate change.
So the idea behind this story in particular was this concept of climate quitting. So when people actually leave their jobs, quit because of concerns over these floods, fires, climate crises that are happening.
Exactly. So I know people from university who've taken jobs in the fossil fuel industry after graduating. So there were two areas that we wanted to investigate in a bit more detail. The first is what advice is out there on how to navigate a conversation with a friend or a family member if you think their fossil fuel job is unethical.
Tricky.
Exactly, yeah. And second, has climate change stopped young professionals from planning long term? So have fears about or anxiety over the effects of climate change stopped young people from pursuing promotion opportunities at work? Or even has climate change stopped them looking for a mentor and someone that works in a role that they can see themselves in a few years?
And so did you then go out looking for some researchers who were studying this topic?
So it actually so happened that around the same time we were having these discussions, we received a pitch from Grace Augustine and Berta Soppe about their research on why young people are leaving the fossil fuel industry. So Grace is an associate professor in business and society at the University of Bath in the UK. And Berta is an associate professor of organization studies at the University of Innsbruck in Austria.
And what were they looking at specifically?
So they'd interviewed people quitting the fossil fuel industry and were trying to determine their reasons for doing so. And their findings fell very much in line with the discussions we'd had as a Quarter Life team, that many people are frustrated with their employer's impact on the climate and that finding a career with purpose and meaning seemed to be much more pronounced with this generation.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Sam.
Thanks, Gemma.
We reached out to Grace Augustine to find out about the research she's doing, and she was kind enough to get permission from some of her interview subjects to use clips from their conversations, and you're going to be hearing some of these throughout today's episode. I started by asking Grace what sparked this research, and she told me it began when she saw a viral LinkedIn post in which Caroline Dennett, a safety consultant with a large oil company, announced that she was terminating her contract with the company because its leadership didn't take climate change seriously enough.
It was really that initial post, but also how we saw people's reactions to that post that we thought there might be something here. I wonder if she's the only one doing this or if this is more of a widespread phenomena. And we've been lucky enough to speak with Caroline, and she's really put herself out there publicly, whereas some of the other people we've spoken to are not as public about their climate quitting action, but we certainly feel like we're onto something.
So far, Grace and her colleagues have interviewed 39 people who cite climate concerns as their main reason for leaving their jobs. The research is ongoing and it's not been published yet, though they have presented it at conferences where it's undergone peer review.
We really wanted to understand what the sort of impetus was to them quitting, what led to them even thinking about quitting, and then the whole process by which they went about quitting their jobs.
These 39 interviewees are from all over the world, including the US, the UK, Canada, Chile, Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, and Australia. And perhaps not surprisingly, they are mostly young people.
We are finding that this is more prevalent amongst younger people, which doesn't surprise us when we look at trends with the younger people being more concerned about climate change more generally, as well as being more apt to seek out employers who have better environmental, social, and governance credentials, and to hold their employers to account more for those claims that they make. But we actually have also interviewed people who are mid-career and at the later stages of their career.
Grace has interviewed people who work in a number of different industries for her research so far, but most work in the oil and gas sector.
Any decision to leave your job, there are push factors and pull factors. And in oil and gas, there is a much stronger push factor based on this cognitive dissonance that people report feeling at work. Whereas people that we're seeing in other industries, like there's been a few high profile people who have left the tech industry and have decided to commit their career to fighting climate change. Those people, I'd say we see more pull factors. You know, they see this as, this is the biggest problem facing humanity. I want to put my skills and my talent towards this complex, difficult problem because I'm a problem solver, you know. But with oil and gas, there's some of that draw, but there's more of a push factor than a pull factor.
Regardless of the industry, all of the interviewees have cited concern about climate change as the main reason for leaving their jobs. But for those who work in the oil and gas sector, you might wonder why they decided to take the job in the first place.
I also had the same question going into this research, you know, well, didn't everyone kind of know what they were getting themselves into when they would have joined an extractive industry? Yes and no. I think some joined in a period where there seemed to be more of a genuine commitment to change. Some of them thought that they were joining at a time that they could actually be part of the energy transition from within the incumbent companies who had the skills, the technology, the resources to actually make that transition happen.
Here's one man giving his reasons for why he decided to work for an oil and gas company.
The real line that got me was that gas would be the bridge fuel to a carbon-free future. And looking back on it, I think I used that as rationalization to take on the role that I wouldn't be able to work on alternative energy right away, but I'd be working on the next step to alternative energy, which is gas, natural gas. I really didn't want it on my conscience that I was making the world worse using the talents and skills I acquired for many years of study to make the world worse and bring us on the brink of a climate disaster.
Many of the people Grace interviewed said that they joined the industry and stuck with it because they genuinely enjoyed their roles.
They may have had a good salary, good learning experiences, enjoyed their colleagues, some interesting intellectual challenges at work, access to resources or labs that they might not get in other settings.
But eventually,
that cognitive dissonance comes in where it can physically affect you.
Cognitive dissonance as a term, so this idea that your behaviors are not matching your belief system and you feel the need to either change your beliefs or change your behavior, that came up time and time again from our interviewees. You know, they were very aware of the conflict that they were feeling and the discomfort that they were feeling based on that cognitive dissonance. They were increasingly feeling a sense of urgency around the climate crisis, you know, something that they thought might be happening 10, 15, 20 years down the line, such as heat records being broken or climate-related weather events. You know, they felt an increasing sense that it couldn't wait any longer for them to leave this industry that they felt was really at the heart of the problem.
Some traced the realization that they needed to quit back to one event.
The breaking point or tipping point for me was there was one day where I was in the office and I watched Greta Thunberg's speech from fall of 2019. It was like the weekend after, a week after she did that. And she was just like, I don't remember the exact phrasing, but like, why do we as kids have to be like yelling at you about this?
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you?
And that was like a really powerful moment. I just like closed my office door and cried.
Another woman told Grace about a community event that she attended as part of her job that was a tipping point for her.
This was an opportunity for local residents to state their own concerns, and it was a packed house. It was crazy hot, and one by one, local residents were coming forward and with their 2 minutes describing all the health issues that their children have. They were describing what it's like to be afraid to come out of their home. I mean, I don't remember all the details specifically, but I just remember being insanely embarrassed. And it was extremely eye-opening. It was actually very uncomfortable. There was a lot of sort of jabs at oil and gas in terms of the failed state of the community. And these are things I was so embarrassed to learn. I had no idea that just 5 miles down from where I was living, 1 out of 3 children were living in poverty. And I was sort of appalled because I had sort of kept myself in this idea that what I was doing, what oil and gas was doing, was supposed to benefit local communities. I was like, that's the whole reason we're here, right?
If you're enjoying the Conversation Weekly, you might also enjoy the We Society podcast from the Academy of Social Sciences, where host Will Hutton untangles the grand challenges we face as a society through a social science lens. Will has gathered some of the UK's most groundbreaking and influential social scientists to ask how their research could help solve some of the UK's and the world's most pressing problems. In the coming season, the We Society will tackle Britain's ailing high streets, bankrupt councils, and the continued lack of disability inclusion, amongst other important topics. So, if you want to hear research-led insights and solutions and a great conversation, look up the We Society on all podcast platforms. Now back to the Conversation Weekly. As these employees began waking up to this feeling of cognitive dissonance within themselves, their employers often unwittingly contributed to it with their internal rhetoric around climate change.
We frequently talk about concepts like greenwashing and hypocrisy. We think about those in terms of a company's relationship to the public, but I don't think we tend to think about that in terms of a company's relationship with its own employees. And that is an interesting part of our evolving findings, is that employees are also very sensitive to greenwashing and actually, you know, are upset by the fact that they're not seeing things change internally at the same degree that maybe public statements might lead people to believe.
One thing that I found really frustrating was the difference between public statements and the high level kind of policy statements that any oil and gas company has, and then the day-to-day, you know, how that gets watered down when it becomes more applicable. So, you know, like a company might say that they support carbon pricing, but when there's an opportunity to speak to a government about carbon pricing, it'll be, oh, but that bit's a bit difficult, isn't it? What about we make that bit a bit different? And it's just this constant watering down of everything. And that was a real struggle. And so I'd try to have conversations like, we said we'd support this thing, but, you know, when it comes to the practice, there's this big gap there. And in essence, nearly everything was just some proxy of a decision about maximizing quantifiable financial value.
You would hear at work like bits about like, oh yeah, climate's important, here's what we're doing, whatever, we're improving our energy efficiency, or we're investing in this new technology, which is all good and fine. But more broadly, the acknowledgement that like, this is a major issue and will completely change the business and your career here was missing. So from that perspective, it was like, oh yeah, we're going to, you know, do all these cool projects at the refinery, but like the refinery is on its way to be a defunct technology, or should be, right? And like that acknowledgement didn't exist anywhere in the company and no one was ever talking about it. So I just felt, I was like, am I crazy for like thinking this is such a big deal?
So it's like they begin their jobs and they're kind of aware of this cognitive dissonance, and interesting that they use that term themselves. Is it that then kind of pushes them to leave at some point when they just say, I can't deal with this anymore. I can't say that I'm someone who lives by my values and still have this job.
You might assume you feel cognitive dissonance, and then there's this almost trigger reaction where you feel, okay, I need to move away from this situation. But sometimes it was a 3, 5, 7 year process of coming to terms with this and actually deciding to leave. There are the obvious factors like the financial benefits, the career stability, maybe not wanting to move your family geographically. All of these things are barriers to leaving any job. But what was interesting here is that one of the main rationalizations we heard is people saying, you know, actually we need people like me on the inside. And so if I leave, and if everyone who's concerned about climate change leaves this industry, there's no hope for it to ever change. And so they would try to exhaust opportunities to change things from within prior to finally deciding to leave.
For those teetering on the edge of leaving, Grace told me that sometimes a public event, such as an oil spill, would push them over and they decide to quit. But for others, there was a more personal catalyst.
Like a layoff that may have been points for greater reflection about, you know, what am I doing? What is this job giving to me? Can I really trust I'm going to be in this role for the next 15, 20 years? The other time that people reported a great deal of reflection, and this underpins massive shifts in the labor market, is during COVID. You know, when people had a lot more time to themselves, when they were working from home, that's when a lot of people started investing in their career transition. So following different people on LinkedIn, signing up for massive online courses about sustainability, learning more about the renewables energy, thinking about how to talk about their skill set in a more generalized sense, connecting with other like-minded people online who also are interested in leaving their jobs.
And what did people do when they left? Were they able to find other jobs? Have they always changed industries completely? Yeah, tell us what kind of paths people have taken.
I don't know if this is the case for climate quitting more generally, or if there's something about the way that we have identified our interviewees, primarily through people who have put their stories out there more. So I'll just sort of add that bit of, I guess, nuance to our study. But we largely find that it's not just about quitting. There's a process that we're calling repurposing. Sometimes we talk about it as becoming a career defector, because there's this idea that they not only want to leave the industry, they want to work directly against it in their next role. So they are either trying to bring about massive industry transformation through joining the renewables sector. That's probably the most common place we're seeing people go, but some are also working for organizations like Extinction Rebellion. I'd say that's the extreme end and the minority, but there's a handful of people there. And some are working for nonprofit organizations that are thinking about the energy transition more widely and about how to make what's sometimes called a just transition, which includes, you know, thinking about the livelihoods of people working in these industries today and how can you help them reskill and make sure that it's not a transition that puts hundreds of thousands of people out of work overnight. So they're very committed to working on climate change directly and to helping other people who are interested in leaving their jobs for similar reasons find a path forward. I think that's really interesting as well. So usually leaving your job is a very individualistic choice and decision. And this is a very collective phenomena that we're seeing. There's organizations popping up with Slack channels and mentoring and open door policies. Talk to me about how you can work on climate. You know, let's put our brains together and think about how you can help talk about your skill set in a more general way.
Is there an element of atonement in a decision like that, kind of making up for the damage that they feel that they personally have done to the planet?
That's another word that our interviewees have actually put forward themselves, is this idea of atoning. It's come up in a couple interviews, in particular with the older generation of people, I think, who put more years into the industry and maybe felt there were times that they should have left earlier.
Let's talk about the other side of this. So the industries, the companies who are actually losing workers, particularly oil and gas extractive industries. How big a problem is climate quitting for them right now?
I don't think it's a huge issue today, but I think everything that's driving it is only going to increase. If awareness of climate change, anxiety of climate change, if that's one of the main drivers of this, unfortunately, that's not going anywhere anytime soon. And the other side of it is that these concerns are most pronounced amongst younger workers, and they're going to come to dominate the workforce in the coming years. And so I do think we're on to something relatively new. I don't think that this is decimating employee levels, but I do think the PR that comes with some of these more public exits as well is obviously got to be concerning to these companies. Mm-hmm. And then there's their general aversion to work for companies like this is another side of it. You know, they're really struggling to recruit. And I've talked to a couple students who are actually leading recruitment bands at their universities as well. So that's another side of this. I think this is a really interesting new lever. You know, I mean, we've had the levers around regulation, around emissions. We have international climate negotiations, you know, and it's never going to take one lever. But I think that the talent one is a new one on the radar of these companies that they may be pressured more into considering their environmental impact or their environmental commitments. But it remains to be seen whether or not they'll act in the face of this new talent lever.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks to Grace Augustine for speaking with us and for getting permission to use clips from her interviews in this episode. And thanks to her interview subjects who agreed to let us use their voices and statements in this podcast. Thanks also to our colleague Sam Phelps, who heard at the top of the show, who worked with Grace and her colleague Bertis Sorpe on their original story for The Conversation. We'll pop a link to that in our show notes. And we'll also link to The Conversation's Quarter Life series, which has a lot of stories aimed at people in their 20s and the particular challenges that they face. This episode was written and produced by Katie Flood, with production assistance from Mend Marawani. I'm Gemma Ware, the show's executive producer. Sound design was by Eloise Stevens, and our theme music is by Nita Sahl. Stephen Kahn is our global executive editor, Alice Mason runs our social media, and Saraya Nandi does our transcripts. You can connect with us on Instagram at theconversation.com or email us directly at podcast@theconversation.com. You can also sign up for The Conversation's free daily newsletter by clicking on the link in our show notes. If you like what we do on the show, please support this podcast and The Conversation more broadly by going to donate.theconversation.com. And do also please rate and review the show wherever you listen. It really helps us reach a wider audience. And tell your friends about us too. Thanks for listening.